This is the Elevate Podcast, where we have conversations to elevate your health, relationships, and soul. I'm Amanda Noga. I'm a yoga and Ayurveda practitioner, and each week I'm joined by my co-host, holistic health coach, Sarah Hopkins. So let's dive into this week's episode.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the Elevate Podcast. We're so happy to be here. So happy that it is the celebration season. Christmas is just a couple of days away, as everyone would know. And for me, okay, what's kind of more interesting and like personally relevant is the solstice that we've just had. So that's a very auspicious kind of junction of time and something I always like to honor. But before we get into anything further, today we're talking about mental fitness, as you would have seen from the title of this episode. But before we jump into that and what it all means, especially at this kind of supercharged time of year, Sarah Hopkins, how are ya?
I'm good. It's been, in inverted commas, busy with the winding down of the school year. Rafa's first full year of school completed and the many, oh my gosh, many social Christmas events, which, you know, maybe we can delve into in terms of managing emotions around that in the episode. So yeah, just it's been busy from a social perspective and sort of a life admin perspective in terms of getting organized for that. And then from a work perspective, it's been quiet, which always happens for me at this time of the year. And I'm always sort of grateful for that opportunity to not be extremely busy at work at the same time.
As everyone's health priorities go on the back burner.
They do. Like, honestly, everybody, firstly, I don't get a lot of new clients. I've got a couple circling, but I don't get many people booking in to start in December.
It's also just not that energy of starting something in December, is it?
It's the energy of completing something. And then, yeah, a lot of my clients, because all of my clients have pre-bookings, like for, you know, a number of sessions pre-booked, and they just drop. They drop because people are just like, oh, I can't bring my food diary in, or I'm busy shopping at the moment or whatever. So it's good for me because it gives me that time to also do all of that stuff. But cool. One thing that I wanted to share that I think our listeners might appreciate, and I think you will also, is that there's been quite a few miraculous pregnancies. I know, it's beautiful. One in particular, there's probably three that have all just happened in the last couple of weeks. What a beautiful time to have a miracle pregnancy at the end of the year like that. So, but one in particular I wanted to share. So this particular client has been trying for probably 4 or 5 years. She has a son the same age as Raphael, so he's 6. She's done many, many failed IVF cycles. She came to see me a year ago. She was very compliant, very committed, which obviously a lot of my fertility clients are. She does have some autoimmune thyroid issues. She actually lost quite a lot of weight. She did have about 10 kilos to lose, and that just fell off her and she was feeling so much better. But it wasn't happening for her fertility-wise, and she did go back to try IVF, which she was a little bit bummed about. And I was like, look, you will have a better IVF outcome this time. And she was comforted by the fact that her eggs were grade A quality for the first time ever. Her embryos were rated really well for the first time ever, but nothing worked.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, but she ended up having a chemical pregnancy. And then basically the IVF place said to her, listen, it's over for you. They said, wow, you need to get counseling. Well, they offer counseling there, and you need to 100% come to terms with the fact that you're not having a second child and just be grateful for the fact that you've got one. Like, they literally said that to her. They said,
I'm surprised.
I know. They sometimes do this.
They can just make more money.
I know. It's weird. Well, I think, they obviously really believe that it was never going to happen for her. I was genuinely shocked that they would even say that. Like, why wouldn't they just yet spin her wheels a bit longer? But anyway, I guess that's a good sign, sort of. Anyway, so she was devastated. And I just said to her, don't give up. Like, I don't really hold that much weight to what these clinics mm-hmm. say. Like, they're all over the place. And I've seen so many miracles happen before. But anyway, lo and behold, out of nowhere, she texts me with a positive pregnancy test. And she's conceived naturally. I love
how many, how many photos of positive pregnancy tests you get in your inbox. That's so funny.
Oh, it's so funny. So, yeah, she has fallen pregnant naturally. And, of course, she's only about 7 weeks, but she has had her first scan and the heartbeat is super strong and everything's looking amazing, really high hormone levels, like, it's just amazing.
So question, when the clinic said, okay, you need to, you know, go and come to terms with the fact that you're not going to have a second baby, did she go through that emotional process of kind of letting go and surrendering? Or was she like, no, I'm going to persist with my, you know, my other methods?
I don't think enough time had passed for her to process that fully.
Yeah.
I think she was in limbo, like, because I said to her, why don't we do some functional testing and look at MTHFR and B12 and folate, serum folate, and like do some of that stuff. Like I suggested to do some of that stuff with the functional practitioner that I do, like, you know, link in with sometimes. And she was like, yeah, let me have a think. So yeah, I don't think it was that surrender and it will come sort of thing that people talk about. If that's mm-hmm. sort of what you're asking, I don't. I just think it was like the soul was like, I'm coming in naturally.
Yeah, you know? Go soul.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's
and the timing, we can't understate how intelligent the body is when it comes to, and how intelligent these souls are when it comes to divine timing. There's, I'm sure we talked about this in our fertility episodes way back, but I always, and this is something I was talking about with my girlfriend yesterday, who's wanting to have a baby but not anytime soon. So we're talking about like preconception care. And I just was mentioning, you know, we can control certain elements like the quality of our eggs. We can control, you know, our environment and our, you know, our schedule and our stress. We can control the health of our womb and, you know, certain other things. But the one thing that we can't control is the timing, and the one thing that we have to surrender is the season that that baby is going to come in, because that's something that we, you know, is part of the beautiful mystery that is having pregnancy, a birth, a baby, the totally. Mystery of life, you know.
Yeah, so. Totally. And then another client, she also has autoimmune thyroid. She hasn't been seeing me for that long, but I did think it was going to be harder for her. And I've obviously cleaned up her diet and really got her looking and feeling much better. And then her best friend came in to work with me and she was pregnant, but she was like, I don't want to tell her because I'm worried that she's going to be a little bit triggered by it. And she's basically fallen pregnant at exactly the same time as her best friend.
Oh, that's so nice.
So that's wonderful. And then another client who had PCOS came to see me for that and basically wasn't menstruating, and then eventually she wasn't ready to try, she just wanted to prepare her body, and then she went to the clinic and started ovulation induction, and when mm-hmm. when they tracked her bloods, they were like, oh, you've ovulated naturally, why don't you just try naturally? And she was like, oh my god, that's a miracle, because she obviously wasn't ovulating at all for all of that time. And now she's just falling pregnant naturally. So that would have been her first.
Oh, wow, that's so cool.
Yeah. So she also just sent me a text. Gotta love a miracle.
Christmas miracle.
I know. So, like, yeah, three out, like, against the odds miracle pregnancies in a couple of weeks.
And we know that the soul's choosing to come in at this very interesting time on our planet.
Are they mad?
Are we wanting to be here? No, they're like, okay, all hands on deck. Let's get this shit cleaned up. All yeah. the super souls, come on down.
Super souls, I love it. And what about you, little dear? What is happening in Mandy?
Well, I wanted to ask you, because I feel like I was going to ask you about Christmas with Rafa, because I feel like this stage is, you know, between 1 and 2 years. So I feel like this is our last Christmas that we have without him really having a clue about what's going on and like what is Christmas, you know, and we're in Bali, so Christmas is a bit funny.
Oh, can I just say?
Yeah.
I'm interrupting you. I'm sorry. But I feel like I'm probably going to answer your question. This is actually, I think you've got a few years under your belt because this is the first year. Like last year, he was excited.
Oh, great.
But this year is the first year that he's really, like, the Christmas tree, he was like, just to see the joy and excitement and, like,
oh my God, so cute.
This is the first year that he has really, really, like, being the embodiment of, like, excitement for Christmas that I've never seen.
I wonder if that has to do with, like, all of the lead up that comes with the school as well.
Yeah.
Like, how many Christmassy things they do at school in the last year.
The funniest thing, though, is that he's absolutely shit scared of the Christmas tree when the lights are on it. Like, is that the funniest thing you've ever heard? Like, he won't go to the toilet on his own when the Christmas tree lights are on because I think he thinks the Christmas tree is going to attack him.
Yeah, it's really weird. Its own.
I think it's from a movie. I think it's from the Grinch movie or something. I think he goes into the Christmas tree. Anyway, it's a little bit funny, so but cute. Probably like laughing at his misfortune a little bit. But he's so excited, and it is so beautiful to see Christmas through the eyes of a beautiful
Christmas spirit
child. Yeah, it's gorgeous.
So I've had a Christmas tree made of coconuts and it's really cool. So yeah, obviously everyone in Bali is like Sam's family, and you know, we're all like wanting to do something, but it also feels a little bit ridiculous to like eat Christmassy food or like even decorate the house and stuff. I don't know. It all just feels a bit weird.
Yeah.
But we are having Christmas lunch at our house. We're hosting this year. It's going to be really fun. But we have an Indonesian / Australian Christmas menu going on.
Awesome.
Because we also don't have an oven, so we can't really cook like roast veggies or anything.
Well, an Aussie Christmas is like salads.
Well, that's what I was saying to my friend, like, because she's English, and so she was like, oh, what if we do like this and that? And I was like, what even are those dishes? And she's like, well, what do you guys eat for Christmas? I was like, seafood on the barbecue and salad. She was like, what?
Yeah.
But yeah, but I feel like Christmas for me has, in the last like 5 or 6 years, always been overshadowed by Flow Festival, which usually happens at this time of year, and the solstice, which is, yeah, like a really important part of our natural calendar. And just a couple of days ago on Sunday, one of our mutual friends, Sam Briatico, and I hosted this amazing event online to mark the solstice and to raise money for Karma Collab and Nat Girls in India and also here in Bali. So that is, for me, like lighting me up and a way of really activating that kind of Christmas spirit, the spirit of giving and all of those sort of things and coming together, you know, like in community. It's always beautiful. And yeah, I just wonder when we're going to have an Australian Christmas again.
Oh my God, please let it be soon.
I don't know, maybe next year. Like,
maybe.
I have no hope anymore. I'm just like, maybe we're never going back. Maybe we're never going to leave Bali ever.
Yeah, anything is possible and everything is changing. So
infinite possibilities.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But anyway, let's dive into this episode because, as everybody knows, mental health and kind of heightened emotions are synonymous with this time of year, Christmas and New Year, whether you know, a big celebrating on Christmas or not. It's always this kind of charged environment culturally, and the New Year as well can bring up all kinds of mixed emotions for people. And I think one of the big things that complicates it, and I do recall us touching on this when we did an episode on alcohol a couple of years ago. So if anyone's interested about like sober curious or just unpacking our relationship to alcohol a little bit more, go back and listen to that episode. But I think what we did mention there is like how a increased consumption of alcohol around this time, and obviously all of the extra celebrations and parties, which can be really beautiful, of course, we have to celebrate. I really believe that celebration is a important energy for us to communicate with the universe, like, yes, we like these things, we are grateful for these things, we're celebrating these aspects of our life, and so we want more. And it kind of, it encourages the universe to magnetize more of that into our field. But what comes with that more often than not is lots of alcohol. And so that has a massive, massive effect on our mental health. And many people experience anxiety even through the act of drinking. It can bring on like social anxiety. And afterwards, I would say probably more people afterwards, and me definitely afterwards, experiencing anxiety, depression, and a whole like cascade of other things that go on to impact our mental health, like not wanting to eat as well. And then that, you know, has an impact, disrupting our sleep. Then that has an impact. I mean, it just goes on and on. But today we're going to focus on mental fitness, as we're calling it, and the things that we can do to stay mentally well through this kind of fraught time of year.
Hello, it's Sarah here, and I'm just briefly interrupting this episode to tell you a little bit more about what I offer. So I've worked with literally hundreds and hundreds of women, helping them transform their health, hormones, fertility, and more. And I absolutely love working one-on-one with women because we're all uniquely different. So if you're interested in learning more about coaching with me, or if you're ready to book an initial consultation, you'll find the link in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you.
I think to add to that as well, absolutely, alcohol and all of the, you know, sort of byproducts that come from consuming it, physiological byproducts that come from consuming it, is a factor. But also I think the other factor that is amplified during the festive season is relationships and the, you know, the expectation, I think, more than anything, for things to be harmonious and for things to be joyous and for things to be social and for there to be maybe social inclusion and love and connection. And, you know, the expectation of those things can also create a heightening of low mood or depression or high stress levels or anxiety, if that makes sense. We can't discount that this time of the year amplifies anything that might be just like running below the surface when it comes to, you know, some of these mental vulnerabilities.
For sure. And it's like we go into these social celebration events and gatherings with our friends and family, sometimes people that we haven't seen for a long time, or maybe we don't see regularly, and maybe we don't see eye to eye on many issues, which is definitely going to be a big one this year. But yeah, like you said, all of that anticipation and build up and the desire for it to be harmonious and Christmas kind of like Disney movie of like what it's supposed to be when we come together as a family, of course, doesn't happen. And that expectation in itself leads to like potential fights, potential disappointment, awkwardness, just the whole array of things that can come up. And I was thinking as well, like if you are choosing to go into this celebration season sober, that as well could bring up all kinds of, weird conflicts and uncomfortable kind of conversations and anxiety in itself.
Totally. Yeah, definitely. And even I feel particularly anxious this year, which you've already alluded to, but I feel anxious this year because I know that there's a lot of differing opinions about COVID and vaccinations within the family unit. And so I have some anxiety about that. And then if I choose to drink, which I probably will, that could exacerbate that and you know, potentially heighten sensitivity or heighten reactivity or confidence to become a little bit more argumentative. So yeah, it's complex. It's always complex, but
so
I think
what's
it's
your
extra complex
strategy here? Like within the family, is there a kind of unspoken agreement that we're just not going to go there? Or is it like, no, this is on the table for debate?
I actually don't know, because I know that there are members of my family that know my position and know not to go there, but I also
because
know
they disagree.
But
because they just don't want to talk about it.
They disagree and they think that it is a futile argument to have.
Right.
Which I'm happy with. But I know that there has been robust sort of conversations about it within that family group in other social engagements that I haven't been at. So there is potential for it to come up.
What's your tactic? Are you sort of just like, let's keep the peace and just not bring up the conversation of COVID and the vaccines and let's just have a nice Christmas? Or is it like, this is kind of the only thing people are talking about?
Well,
I guess I'm very curious because my situation, and this will be probably, you know, the same for other listeners, I'm not going to see my family this Christmas, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This is like, I don't really know what that climate is.
Well, I think my strategy, I'll give you an update in the next episode probably about whether or not how that actually went. I think my strategy is going to be that of an avoidant person. I think if it comes up, I'll probably have to need to urgently use the toilet. Because I know what I'm like. I am very opinionated.
Yes.
And I feel fairly qualified to have a robust debate about it.
Especially with a couple of sparklings under your belt.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know if that's very productive. Mm. I don't think it is productive, you know.
In that context.
I don't think it's productive really at all. For the most part, firstly, you know, you don't want to hear some of the arguments that I've already put forward. If you haven't listened to our episode entitled A Catch Up About Everything, go and listen to that. All of the arguments that I might put forward, if you've already, you know, chosen to vaccinate yourself, you probably don't want to hear that stuff. And you also, talking from the perspective of many members of my family here, you also patently believe that a sort of a different view on things, which is fine. I understand that view, you know. So that what's the point? It's a bit, you know, what this needs to be like. And I think, you know, maybe this sounds like a bit tangential, like we're going off topic, but we're not, because this is like literally managing our mental fitness during this time.
This is like the energy. This is the elephant in the room.
Yeah. And this is the nuts and bolts of like one thing that a lot of people might need to manage in terms of keeping their mental well-being in shape, right? But, and now I've lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
I think that most people will be, that's what I was going to say. This is a little bit like politics now. This is politics. Mm. So unless you've got a family that is super, super comfortable with opposing political views and having really robust debates about that, and that's cool and fun and everyone enjoys it and they hug at the end, which I think is rare. I think it's like, oh, you know, like we know that Uncle Joe votes for this weird party over here and that we don't agree with that because we all vote for this other party and we're just not going to talk about politics because that's like super divisive, you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's sort of like that. It's like, unless you want to drop
what's
a bomb,
the saying, it's like don't
sex,
talk
politics,
about,
and
like,
religion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And vaccines.
And that, you know, like, firstly, vaccines are political. They're pretty political. It's a political thing at this point, I would say. You know, like, it's been definitely used by politicians. It's a political tool.
It's not a health issue, but yeah.
No, it's a political issue, firstly, you know, and it's mm-hmm. also sort of being used, the language around it's being used is very religious. I believe.
That's interesting.
you know, I believe in vaccines. Well, vaccines aren't something you either believe in or don't. It's not like Santa Claus. It's not something you believe in. But the language that people are now using, like, I believe in science.
Wow,
science
that's interesting.
Science is not a religion. Science is, in essence, the absolute opposite of religion, because religion is something that is mostly indisputable. It's like, you know, a faith in something that you can't see, that has no proof or validation. It's intangible. Science is literally to criticize, be skeptical, break apart, and in some instances totally like debunk. That is the act of science. Science is critical thinking, it's debunking, it's all of those things. That's the opposite to
religion.
And
it's dealing with everything that is uber tangible.
Tangible, and the tangibility.
It has to be tangible. It has to be replicable.
Yeah, replicable. And it's the tangibility of things that debunks other things. So science is this ever evolving, changing thing. Like, we used to think smoking cigarettes was a cure for all illnesses. Now we know better. And it was, you know, science that probably got us to that point.
So this is really interesting, because in a culture that is pretty void of religion for the most part, or, you know, for people that religion has little meaning in their life, you know, obviously there are lots of people that are religious, but for people that aren't, it goes to show to me that as human beings, we still have a desire to believe in something. And so this use of religious-like language around science itself is culturally the religion of our times. Science is the religion of the times. It's what we worship. It's what we value as a culture. It's what we put up on a pedestal and kind of allow that external being that is science to determine our actions and to guide us and to give us meaning, to give people meaning. I'm not speaking for myself because I have other beliefs, but I can see that it's pretty compelling. And we have this innate desire to believe in something bigger than ourselves. And so science is filling that void right now.
It is.
It's so interesting.
So I think, to circle back, you know, I think being mindful of talking about things that you're really probably not going to come to a harmonious consensus around.
Having a game plan before you go into these situations that, you know, it might come up, to know, like, okay, this is how I'm consciously choosing to go into this scenario, rather than being in that reactive mode and in the moment where we might be triggered and kind of flared up, emotionally flared up.
Definitely. So let's talk about some more sort of practical things around managing our mental fitness. What about you? What do you, like, Christmas aside, what are the things that you do and that you think are important in terms of, like, managing mental fitness, which really means staying well and balanced mentally, psychologically?
Yeah, and I kind of like this new term that's floating about of mental fitness, because it does kind of describe the idea that we need to kind of stay on top of our mental health. It's not a static thing. It's something that we continuously need to be checking in with and taking care of, just like our physical fitness.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And to me, there's kind of three different flavors of mental imbalance, could say, and they manifest as either anxiety, which we've done a whole episode on.
Mm-hmm.
If that's, you know, something that's interesting for you, like, definitely go back and listen to that episode on anxiety specifically, but we'll talk about it here as well. But so there's anxiety, which in Ayurvedic language is a symptom of excess vata, too much vata.
Everything is vata.
Well, no, because the other two. I mean, everything seems like vata because as a culture
we are
excessively in vata.
Stressed, yeah.
And that's majorly exacerbated by our use of technology, which is why our nervous systems are fucked. And so vata is the nervous system. So that's why it seems like everything is Vata, because we could also say everything is the nervous system at this point.
Yes.
And everything pretty much can be blamed on technology at this point. Like our messed up sleep, our messed up, all sorts of things. But anyway, so there's anxiety, one. Number two, there's depression, which I guess is kind of the other end of the spectrum. And if we think about anxiety being everything to do with future orientated thoughts and worry into going forward, depression is kind of the opposite flavor, and it's kind of staying in the past and lingering or wallowing in emotions, thoughts, events that have already happened and that we can't change. And that feeling, I think, you know, I don't need to describe what depression is, but, you know, that feeling of being low, feeling of heaviness, and these, in my understanding, are symptoms of excess kapha. So that earthy, watery element when we've given, mostly it happens when we have given to the point of total depletion and our cup is empty and we just feel completely flat. There's nothing left to give. And, you know, hypersensitivity to emotions, highly empathetic, and also that energy of being stuck in a rut. That's all kapha, and that's all kind of what depression brings on, right? And then number three is the flavor of anger, which I think many people are experiencing. And the, I guess the cool thing about anger is that it can be really amazing fuel to make a change. So if we can transmute that anger and channel it into a positive action that is, you know, making a change in the way that we want to see in the world, then it can be really powerful. And we can harness that kind of that fire that is anger.
I think Pitta is also anger.
I was just going to just say, to complete the triangle, if we're not already clear, anger is connected to excess Pitta. So that's kind of the three flavors that we can see our mental imbalance playing out in. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think from a therapeutic perspective, like from a maybe, you know, your more conventional psychological opinion slash perspectives on things. I have a family of psychologists, so I get to hear this sort of psychobabble all the time. I think anger has, and you'll probably agree with this anyway, but anger has slightly higher up the hierarchy, so to speak, in terms of like, so depression is obviously at the bottom. It's the lowest, potentially hardest mental hurdle to overcome, and anxiety can also be there, but maybe is slightly more elevated. But I know that sort of a lot of therapists say that anger is like a step out of it, that there's some action, that there's some energy associated with that, that there's less sort of like, you know, the apathy that you can get with depression makes it really hard for there to be, whereas anger is like a step above that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, it's like when we're feeling depressed, there's a lack of energy, like I said, there's a depletion. And so it's that, again, stuck in a rut energy. And it's almost like we can get into this feeling that although we might feel really shit and really heavy and down and sad, which is very common after excessive alcohol consumption and also around this time of year. And I think just like and, but also, you know, considering the experiences of the last couple of years, I think it's quite, it would be a normal response to feel sad and to feel grief and to feel down and to feel depressed. It's a pretty depressing time. So, yeah, even though we might feel pretty shitty, it's almost like we don't have the energy to make a change at that point. And so, yeah, it might be more difficult to shift. And anger has a different, it definitely has a different energy behind it. However, we can definitely get stuck in that loop of being continuously critical, continuously judgmental, continuously irritated and impatient and quick to fire and always, you know, on the edge of an argument, always ready to set things on fire. We can definitely stay in that state, but I think culturally we perceive it, and this is kind of, I guess, reflected in the psychology world, culturally we perceive anger to be higher up in, like you said, a hierarchy, or almost like more socially acceptable.
Maybe acceptable, because, yes.
Yeah, because we actually really revere that pitta energy of like getting shit done, moving forward, like making change. And yeah, they are cool qualities, but there are also gifts underlying depression as well. It gives us a deeper sense of compassion and empathy. It allows us to be actually connected to our emotions rather than numbed out or, you know, unable to process our emotions. So the hierarchy thing sort of doesn't resonate for me, although I completely get what you're saying, but I don't think one is easier or better than the other. It's just they have different qualities, and they're going to be manifesting for different people depending on our constitution.
Their constitution. Yeah, I tend to think this is a controversial point of view, but whatever. I mean, coming from a family of therapists, like I said, I tend to think that the therapeutic model as the solution, and I'm not saying that it's the, like, in their minds, the only solution, but personally, I haven't seen like just therapy, like particularly like clinical psychology, as an example, like cognitive behavioral therapy or talk therapy, that alone, I don't think is that helpful in terms of mental fitness, because
I completely agree, and again,
like, it's probably a good segue into, like, you know, the multi-modalities that are essential for maintaining mental fitness. And I think, like, again, it's back to, you know, like so many things that we talk about, whether it's industrialized birth or, you know, food or any other topic that we're talking about, you know, it's like people will go, okay, I'm feeling depressed, or I'm feeling anxious, or I've got some anger management issues, I need to go to a therapist. And they're going to sit down and they're going to talk about their childhood, and they might feel a little bit better in the moment and immediately after, because just like they would, no offense to any therapist, but if they had gone and had a good debriefing conversation with one of their friends, like, it's an outlet. But I just don't see, and literally I have done years and years and years and years, like over 5 years of talk therapy, and I just don't see that alone as a modality providing much relief.
No, totally. And how could it? Because we are multidimensional beings.
And we're not just our brain.
I think in the 80s, well, yeah, that's what I mean. We're at the least body, mind, and spirit. Like, I think in the 80s and 90s, talk therapy was, you know, a big hit. And kind of understood as like a cure-all, panacea for anything. And I definitely think therapy has a place.
Yeah, of course.
We need embodiment practices. I think body-based therapy is absolutely key when it comes to our mental fitness. And whether that's something that you are like on the passive end of receiving, which would definitely be very useful for someone that's experiencing anxiety or anger, so vata or pitta, to be receiving some kind of body work, or, for example, I used to receive a chiropractic modality called NSA, network spinal alignment. It's not like old school chiro with cracking or anything like that. It's very soft touch and very subtle. But for me, as someone who's, I would say, more sensitive, and at that time I was really having it to maintain my nervous system, the health of my nervous system, aka vata, at a time that was super busy, and, you know, there was a lot of things going on in my life, different projects and work and running around and blah blah blah. So I was receiving NSA multiple times a week, and I really, really believed that to be an amazing therapy. And there's loads of others, of course, different body-based therapies that can be super helpful. And I think embodiment practices, aka moving your body in a way that feels good for you, whether that's yoga, dance, going for a walk, like surfing, being in nature, whatever, that is really, really key for our mental fitness as well. It cannot just be looking after the brain part.
Like the mind. Said. It's not even the brain. Like it's actually just the it's, like
yeah.
the mind that is well, aware
it's the
of
ego the ego level of the mind.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing to add to that is the other element, which is more psychiatry than psychology, but is also, you know, in the realm of general practitioners, GPs, doctors, is antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication. And again, like we always talk about, like now if people are feeling consistently low or anxious over a period of time, or even have anger management issues, then, you know, if they're that way inclined, they'll trot off to their GP and be given Lexapro or whatever else, the doctor Zoloft or something like that, as the silver bullet and as the solution. So, you know, and again, that's exactly the same as that talk therapy in that it's one-dimensional. It might be working at a more neurological level potentially with some neurotransmitter, you know, adaptations. But again, it's not working.
Well, we're not getting to the root. We're not allowing.
Exactly.
If we embrace the understanding that we do have a soul, we do have a spirit, we do have an energy body, we're almost like cutting off our capacity to heal whatever is going on energetically for us. So if we're only targeting one aspect, whether it's, you know, through talk therapy, which I can see like in our culture, a therapist has really just taken the place of real relationships in our life, you know, the ability to be supported and to share and hear each other within our real relationships, in our community, with our friends, with our, you know, elders. And we don't have that anymore. So we need to pay someone to listen to us and to hold space for what we don't might have, be going through.
We don't have the trust. A lot of people don't have the trust to be that vulnerable.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Because we're operating from our wounding and our patterning and needing to project a certain appearance of what we might, you know, keeping up appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, it's interesting. This is like, I'm just remembering this one time I taught a private retreat for a group of older women. So they're like in their 60s. And they were so-called best friends. I think there was like maybe five or six of them. They used to always go to this private home in the countryside to have their, you know, like weekend getaways and holidays, and they'd been doing this for years and all their kids had grown up together and all of this sort of stuff. And what I observed with these women who were, you know, quite wealthy and well-to-do was the complete lack of authenticity between them. And I was just struck by how sad it was that these are these best friends, so to speak. And they'd been through, you know, divorces and, like, you know, all the things that life throws at you over the course of, you know, being mothers and being women in the world and having all the things that go on. Throughout all of those things, even though that experience, all that stuff side by side, there was no real connection. And this came to a head at one point because maybe this was not the right thing to do, but I was sort of just, really wanting for them to be able to connect in a real way. And so I set them up to do this exercise that we always do this on retreats, and it's something that we do in an ashram that I used to go to all the time in India. It's an exercise where it's called co-listening, basically. And you sit side by side, shoulder to shoulder, facing opposite directions, if you can imagine that. And then one person will talk freely for like 5, 7, 10 minutes, we time it, and the other person will just listen, and then you switch sides. And it's kind of this opportunity to be heard without the other person, you know, giving advice, agreeing, disagreeing, it's just this open space to be held and to be heard. So we did that, and we did another exercise, which is like eye gazing, where you sit facing one another and literally just look into each other's eyes for minutes at a time, which can be pretty confronting for people. Usually most people end up crying because they've never looked at someone, especially if you know them well. Most people haven't looked each other in the eye properly for years, if ever. So anyway, we did these type of exercises, and the women were so uncomfortable. I remember doing the co-listening one, and a couple of them were, they just kind of like had a fit, and they were like, nope, we're not doing this. And they kind of walked out. And it was, you know, I was prepared for that because I knew it was going to be uncomfortable. And I knew that we were also in this really safe container of being in their private, you know, villa, and we were going to have space afterwards to like hash out and clear anything that might come up. But I guess I'm just, yeah, that memory came up, and it just goes to show that so much of our mental health, and I guess why we're struggling so much as a collective at this time, is because there's this missing essential element from our lives that is real relationships and genuine support from our nearest and dearest. And if we can't have it from our family, which most people that I know don't receive that, if we can't even have it from our chosen family or friends, like, where are we going to get it? It sucks. But I feel like because mental health is becoming such a big part of our conversation, it's going to change. And I can see just even in my younger sister how much more open and real and vulnerable her and her friends are, and her like just general community are. There's an understanding that, yeah, there's more consciousness there, I think.
Okay, my love, it's Amanda here. And instead of telling you about my yoga and Ayurveda offerings as per usual, if you want to learn about what I'm currently offering, go to yogaalchemy.com.au and you can see if there's one-on-ones available, group mentoring, teacher training, and all that stuff. What I'm really here to tell you about today is Karma Collab. So many of you are already familiar with this project that I started about 7 years ago in support of women and girls in rural India and also now here in Bali. Karma Collab is entering, as we go into this new year, its next evolution, its next phase. And part of that is a brand new jewelry collection where all of the proceeds go to providing education for girls and also providing support for mothers through pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. So it's something that I'm really excited about. And there's lots of other ways that we can join forces and really empower ourselves through the act of giving and receiving. So if you want to learn more about Karma Collab, join our mailing list, go to karmacollab.org. The link will be in the show notes, of course, and come and follow us on Instagram. So much love is poured into this project, and I'm really excited to have you as part of our global network of women who support other women through real action and activism. Mwah.
But I don't think that's universal, because I have a sister who is
the same age.
Yeah, 24, turns 24 today, actually. I mean, she's a therapist. She's training to be a therapist. So her mindset is very pro therapy, pro medicine.
Continuing the patterns that she's inherited.
I know.
Which we all do. I'm not saying that as like a flippant or judgmental thing. It's like, this is what we do as humans.
Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting because I did expect there are parts of her that are very different, like the level of, in inverted commas, progressiveness is so different. But I don't think that there's that vulnerability there. But maybe I think that's to do with education and family values and that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah.
But maybe we should, we are actually running into the hour. So let's talk about.
Okay, let's hit each of these three flavors of mental unfitness. And maybe we can like share one or two things each that we have done or we recommend to do for each.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, let's start with anxiety. Big one, like I said, we've already covered because it's
so huge,
prevalent. Yes. It's everywhere. And again, like what we were saying before, with anger, I think anxiety has become much more socially acceptable. And our language around, although we might not desire to feel anxious, I think it's something that we all understand that, you know, is a natural kind of response to our current environment and our current lifestyle. Most women, I would say, experience anxiety.
Definitely.
And, yeah, our languaging around it has become, I guess, quite accepting. So that's interesting as well. So anxiety, I think my top two things, and these, of course, are going to be things that I've already said before because, like we said, everything is nervous system, everything is vata. But first of all, grounding, so being connected to nature, getting your feet on the ground, literally, that's as simple as it needs to be. The best is going for a walk on the beach because if the earth is wet, then you get that negative ion restructure going on in your body and you get automatically like a reset for your nervous system. So if you can't walk on a beach, you can stand on your grass and like water the lawn or water the grass or the plants, whatever. If you live by a lake or a river, then go down to where the water meets the shore, you know. So get grounded. That's just, I think, one of the best medicines and something that is free and that we can all tap into. And if we think about it in terms of Ayurvedic language, vata is up in the air. It's the wind element. And so what balances it? Earth and water, getting down, getting down at the other end of that spectrum, if that makes sense.
Love it.
So you say one.
Okay, so I think for me and what I recommend to my clients probably above all else for anxiety is breathing. And this has been something that when I have been feeling, and actually it's probably something I need to remind myself to do before I walk into Christmas lunch or any of those other social situations that will be overwhelming over the Christmas period. And the one that I like that's just the easiest is the box breath. So it's breathing in through the nose for the count of four, holding for the count of four, and breathing out for the count of four, and then holding again. So you can either visualize a box, and I think I've already recommended it at least on one podcast in the past. But, you know, I've found at times when I'm really anxious or stressy, or even if I've had a coffee when I shouldn't have and I'm really finding it hard to regulate my stress hormones, that, or even if I'm not sleeping well or I can't fall asleep, that just breathing, even just a minute of box breathing, will just take it away. Like literally, like bring me
also
back down
known
to
as
neutral.
Samavriti. That's a breath that I always, always teach in yoga class. And I've heard like countless, like hundreds, thousands of people come back to me and say, like, oh my God, I use that, you know, on a flight and it really helped. Or I use it to help me go to sleep, or I use it when I went into my exam or whatever. Yes. It's something that you can do, even if you're like in a long line buying Christmas presents and feeling this hectic fucking Christmas consumption vibe, then, you know, I would do it then. It's something you can literally do at the Christmas table.
Yeah, totally. So does that constitute our two? I think that makes sense to do like one each and then move on. Yeah.
Depression.
I think that when it comes to, I mean, this applies for all three, obviously, and we've done an episode on this. We're doing another episode on this season because it's so important. But I honestly feel like again, from a personal perspective, when I don't get either like a sort of continuous and deep sleep, and or I don't get enough hours of sleep, which for me needs to be about 8, I find it really hard to regulate my emotions, and that I have a tendency to hypersensitivity, overreactivity, jags of crying, like low mood, sort of glass half empty perspective on the world. And, you know, so for me, it's like to be elevated in mood, we have to get that deep restorative sleep. And that, you know, we're not going to go into the sleep hygiene around that, but, you know, getting to bed by 10 and waking up at 6 o'clock and managing exposure to light in the 4 hours preceding the 10 p.m. bedtime.
It's just number one. Specifically when it comes to depression, the making sure that we're getting up early is really, really important.
Definitely.
Getting that early, like you said, early exposure to sun in the eye.
Yeah.
Because like when you first said sleep for depression, I feel like I was surprised, because it's counterintuitive, because I guess one of the common symptoms of excess kapha or depression
is sleepiness, fatigue.
And, you know, feeling continuously lethargic and continuously tired and waking up tired. And this has sleeping to do in. With, sleeping in, not being able to get out of bed in the morning. That's like the classic description,
number one,
right?
Yes.
So I think what's important for like the nuanced understanding is to sleep at the right time.
I mean, I know people with chronic fatigue and they, you know, they're exhausted, but they actually don't sleep at all, if much, during the night. You know, people are like, oh, chronic fatigue. Well, I thought that they'd be sleeping all the time. No. And the thing is, even for the, in inverted commas, like the depressed person that's sort of exhausted in the morning, they're more than likely not getting that deep restorative sleep. If they were, it would be, they would feel that elevation in the morning. It's like low cortisol in the morning when it should be high.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, just to be really aware of the fact that getting up early is going to actually also help to start regulating the sleep cycle. So we're going to get tired in the evening and all of that sort of stuff. So
it's
going to help overall. So that's a really interesting one. Love that.
What about you?
I would say for depression, what's really key is moving the body.
Yes, definitely.
Moving the body in a way that inspires joy, that makes you feel like yourself, or at the least makes you feel a little bit better. Like you never regret going for a walk. You never regret going to yoga, even though you might not feel like it in the moment or in the, you know, hours leading up to it. Just do it. Nike, just do it.
Yeah, definitely.
And if, again, to like use this Ayurvedic language, if we've got excess kapha, so if we're feeling down, feeling depressed, we're too much in the earth and the water. And so what we need is this movement, which is the energy of vata, which is like up and like active and, literally moving the body. Very literal.
Yes.
So
love it.
Number three, moving on to anger. And anger being, you know, like hypercritical, continuously judgmental of ourselves and other people, getting short-tempered into arguments, road rage.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Seeing the opportunities everywhere to start a fight and to be pissed off about something.
Yes. So what do you think for this one? What's your number one for this one?
I'm going to say, if this is what is really current for you and you're feeling this loop of anger and not able to transmute that energy into action in this moment, I'm going to recommend cold plunge therapy.
Love it.
So either getting in a natural body of water that's really cold, that will depend on where you are in the world, obviously. But if you're in, you know, the Northern Hemisphere right now, or through the winter winter and autumn season, then yeah, getting in the ocean or getting in the river when it's cold. Or if that's not the option right now, like if you're in Australia, going to the ocean doesn't count. So getting into cold water in some way, like I know like at many places where they have sauna, they always have cold plunge. Or
not in Perth, like, but you could go to the cryotherapy, like there's a couple of places opening up where you go and do the cold therapy,
cold plunge.
Yeah Yes.
And you can also DIY, like if you are wanting to do it at home, which, yes, you know, if you are excess pitta, you probably have this like ability to get up and go and like make this happen for yourself at home. You can do it by getting like a huge garbage
chest freezer,
or freezer, exactly, and filling it with ice and doing it at home, or like a bathtub even.
Yeah. Awesome.
Doesn't need to be expensive. Okay, what's yours?
I don't know. I'm going to say something like, I was thinking as you were talking, like meditation, but I think maybe for some people, you know, that they struggle with that. So maybe even like something like Reiki, like something that is a modality. If meditation is too hard, because I think meditation is really good for people that have a lot of anger, to just transmute some of that. Yeah, to cool down. But I think if I had to ask my husband, who is definitely like that's his predisposition, if he's going to, which is pretty common for men, like their only emotional regulatory mechanism is anger, right? They're not allowed to cry, they're not allowed to feel anything else. So a lot of, you know, traditionally raised men will just go first to anger, right? So that's my husband's modeling.
And I know his constitution.
And he's pitta to the bone. But I think for him, he wouldn't be able to meditate per se, but he could do some body talk, or he could do some acupuncture, or he could do some Reiki or something like that, where he could be in some way passive but still have some body work that was working on.
Or even like sound healing.
Yeah, sound healing, like the stuff that's working on that like nervous system activation that is causing that reactivity.
Yeah, and in a way it's like when we're in anger, and like I said, if you're not able to transmute that anger at this time into positive action, then it's this energy of like output and being kind of penetrative and forceful in the world,
it's
right?
Yang. And it's the yang energy rather than yin.
Yeah, exactly. And so what's the antidote for that? What's the balance? It's to be receptive. It's to be passive, to literally lay still and chill the fuck out for 45 minutes.
Yeah,
and exactly. Allow someone else to like take care of you and to surrender. And yeah, it might be uncomfortable, just like for the cuffer person or the depressed person, it might be uncomfortable to make yourself get up and go for a walk, or make yourself get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. These things are playing into our tendencies. So if our tendency is always to react with anger, then it's almost more comfortable and more easy for us to continue in that vein and match that energy, rather than do the opposite thing that's going to help to balance us. That's not necessarily going to be easy or comfortable to begin with, but it's going to be the remedy. So, yeah, I love that as well, doing something passive, something receptive, moving the energy in the body.
Yes.
Cool. No,
I think we're nearly at a wrap, but do you have a recce? Because I did just think of a recommendation. I know we don't always make recommendations, but I did just think of something.
Go for it.
It's an Instagram, and I think she also has a book. I don't know the title of her book. We could look it up, or you could just go and find out on her Instagram. So I don't know her name. I just know the title of her Instagram account, and it is The Holistic Psychologist. I'm sure you know her too. Yeah. So she just has so many, like, because she's a holistic psychologist, she has so many good, like, her Instagram is filled with really informative information about mental fitness, really, like informing people about trauma, the way it embodies, you know, the way it manifests physically. And more recently, I've noticed that she started being instructive in terms of like breathing techniques and different things for different, you know, mental challenges, so to speak. You know, like if you're feeling really anxious, like this type of breathing is really good for that. So she's like quite practical. It's really easy to read, you know, but it's very profound, and she's got a lot of wisdom and insight, and I think that it's a really helpful and practical resource.
And that aligns exactly with what we've been talking about today of incorporating not only mind, things body, that look soul. After the mind, only like meditation and talk therapy, but also body-based practices, whether that's active or passive receiving. Yes. And the soul stuff, getting to the root of like, why is this continuously manifesting? Why am I always feeling anxious or angry or depressed? Getting deeper down and actually healing that imbalance at the root so that we can evolve.
Yeah. Love it.
Cool. Well, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
We love you. See you next week, next episode.
Thank you so much, as always, for listening to the Elevate podcast. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review so we can keep bringing these conversations to you all.